Hare Krishna. Today we continue with creation of the universal form, chapter 6, canto 3, text 31. Bahubhyo vartatak shatram. Kshatriyastatanuvrata Yojatastrayate Varna Paurusha Kantaka Shata. Okay, word by word translation. Bahubhyaha, from the arms. Avartata, generated. Kshatram, the power of protection. Kshatriya, in relation to the power of protection. Tat, that. Anuvrata, followers. Yaha, one who. Jataha, so becomes. Trayate, delivers. Varna, the other occupations. Paurushaha, representative of the personality of Godhead. Kantaka, of distributing elements. Of disturbing elements. Like thieves and debauchees. Shatat, from the mischief. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, ISKCON founder Acharya Bhai Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Thereafter, the power of protection was generated from the arms of the gigantic Virat form. And in relation to such power, the Kshatriyas also came into existence by following the Kshatriya principle of protecting society from the disturbance of thieves and miscreants. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As the Brahmanas are recognized by their particular qualification of inclination towards the transcendental knowledge of Vedic wisdom, so also the Kshatriyas are recognized by the power to protect society from disturbing elements of thieves and miscreants. The word anuvrataha is significant. A person who follows the Kshatriya principles by protecting society from thieves and miscreants is called a Kshatriya, not one who is simply born a Kshatriya. The conception of the caste system is always based on quality and not on the qualification of birth. Birth is an extraneous consideration. It is not the main feature of the orders and divisions. In Bhagavad Gita 18:41-44, the qualifications of the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras are especially mentioned. And it is understood that all such qualifications are needed before one can be designated as belonging to a particular group. Lord Vishnu is always mentioned as the Purusha in all Vedic scriptures. Sometimes the living entities are also mentioned as Purusha, although they are essentially Purusha Shakti, Para Shakti or Para Prakriti, the superior energy of the Purusha. Illusioned by the external potency of the Purusha, the Lord, the living entities falsely think of themselves as the Purusha, although they actually have no qualifications. The Lord has the power to protect. Of the three deities, Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwar, the first has the power to create, the second has the power to protect, and the third has the power to destroy. The word Purusha is significant in this verse because the Kshatriyas I expected to represent the Purusha Lord, in giving protection to the Prajas. Prajas means citizens. Or all those who are born in the land and water. All the living beings. Protection is therefore meant for both men and the animals. In modern society, the Prajas are not protected from the hands of thieves and miscreants. The modern democratic state, which has no Kshatriyas, is government of the Vaishyas and Shudras, and not of Brahmanas and Kshatriyas as formerly. Maharaj Yudhishthir and his grandson, Maharaj Parikshit, were typical Kshatriya kings, for they gave protection to all men and animals. When the personification of Kali attempted to kill a cow, Maharaj Parikshit at once prepared himself to kill the miscreant, and the personification of Kali was banished from his kingdom. That is the sign of Purusha, or the representative of Lord Vishnu. According to Vedic civilization, a qualified Kshatriya monarch is given the respect of the Lord because he represents the Lord by giving protection to the Prajas. Modern elected presidents cannot even give protection from their theft cases, and therefore one has to take protection from an insurance company. The problems of modern human society are due to the lack of qualified Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, and the over-influence of the Vaishyas and Shudras by so-called general franchise. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki. Om Agnāti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitām Hena Tasmai Shri Guruvai Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manadishtam Stapitam Ena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shyamasri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So when we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, we often read sections of that have sociological dimension, such as this, discussing society, the structure of society, the management of society. So someone may think, what does this have to do with spirituality? You know, talking about the social system and governments and this and that, what does it have to do with spirituality? Someone may think like that. This is simply some mundane subject matter. But if one examines very carefully why Prabhupada and why the Bhagavatam is bringing these points, one can see that they are linked to a specific objective. And what is this objective? The objective is to align society in such a way that the people can achieve the aim of human life, which is emancipation from, or liberation from, the material cycle of birth and death, samsara chakra, or the topmost purushartha, prema, love of Krishna, Krishna prema. So these subjects are intertwined in a strong foundation build up for reaching the topmost consciousness. Therefore, they are natural, they are not extraneous information that has been put in the Bhagavatam. Because knowledge, according to Bhagavad Gita, means the knowledge of spirit, matter, and the controller of both. So, one is considered knowledgeable if he or she understands reality as it is. So, understanding reality as it is means you need to understand the material energy, you need to understand the spiritual energy, and you need to understand the relationship between material and spiritual energy, which is summarized, or which is culminates, the relationship of material and spiritual energy culminates in the emanation from God or from Krishna. So, when someone studies the material energy, immediately one has to be aware of different social structures that may exist. That's part of Mahatattva, Viratrupa. So, one has to understand what is the natural order to structure society so that he or she can position themselves in practicing spirituality, religion, with the objective of reaching the goal of human life. So, in the previous ages, when the children were born, the leaders of society will study the kid. They will study actually the character, the characteristics, the consciousness of the child. They will examine very carefully. There are specific symptoms that would indicate what is the qualification of that child. They wouldn't just consider that if someone is born a Kshatriya, then he must be a Kshatriya. That became a later practice that was abused and became what we know the caste system today. So the qualities of the children must be studied very carefully, and in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna actually gives very clearly the characteristics of the different varnas in 18 chapter. So here is the characteristics of Brahmanas. You can hear and you can examine your consciousness and see whether you fit into that category. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which the Brahmanas work. Now the next one is the Kshatriyas. Heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity, and leadership are the natural qualities of the work, are the natural qualities of work for the Kshatriyas. Then Vaishya. Farming, cow protection, and business are the natural work for the Vaishyas. And for the Shudras there is labor and service to others. Not much characteristic is given to the Shudras. But there is one quality that they have is their Shudra means someone who is very someone who is very we could say honorably serving his master. There is a specific word that is now not coming to my mind. Shudra was someone who is actually sincerely serving his master. Loyal, yeah. That is the loyal to his master. So these are different characteristics that are there. And the children definitely have characteristics like that could indicate what they are. And of course, one has to examine the children for some time to be able to detect these characteristics. One has to examine the character very carefully. You can't just assume very quickly. Sometimes we do this ritual when the child is small, whether he'll crawl towards the book or towards... I don't know, I never examined whether this is true. You know, in terms of nowadays, our society and how that this fit. And usually we may even direct the child towards the book or something like that. Put some yogurt there or some prasadam, you know, what, sweet rice there next to the book. So we should be very careful to examine the characteristic of our children and guide them appropriately, because Krishna says here in Bhagavad Gita that if they work according to this, they will actually develop very nicely as personalities, as human beings, and then gradually they can be elevated to the spiritual platform. Because if someone works as something else from what their varna is, then this is really not recommended by Krishna, because it causes trouble. Of course, someone, by coming to ISKCON, we can change the varna. It's explained that even Shudra can become a Brahmana by the mercy of the spiritual master. By association with pure devotee, one can be given that mercy. And of course, Prabhupada wanted all devotees in ISKCON to become Brahmanas, so that they could teach Krishna consciousness to the world. And of course, Prabhupada wanted devotees to be Kshatriyas as well, good managers, because he has so many projects and that requires some Kshatriya qualification to manage different projects. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was saying that my disciples, I want them to become Brahman Kshatriyas. Because he said, we've got Brahmans, we've got Kshatriyas, but sometimes it's required that you're a Brahman, but you manage. You know how to manage. And sometimes you're a manager, but you have to be able to teach as well. In an emergency situation. This term is called Raja Rishi, Brahman Kshatriya. So some kings were like that. They had these qualifications. For example, Yudhishthir was a Raja Rishi. King Prithu, grandfather Bhishma, etc. So there is many examples of Raja Rishi. So one can actually change also their qualification. And in fact, by coming to ISKCON, we become transformed. And if one wants to develop in a certain way, then they have to work on themselves. to be able to achieve specific behavior that could fit a specific varna. And that is done not simply for status, but is done in a sense one wants to become more empowered to serve society better, to serve Krishna better. Interesting. So devotees may be changed and transformed if they work towards that goal under the guidance of bona fide spiritual master. So even someone who is explained in the Shastra that even someone is an outcast, complete mlecha and materialistic person of the lowest caliber can actually become situated on the topmost platform under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. So this is the mercy of Prabhupada, that in this age people could be born very, very low quality, Kalau Shudra Shambhava, but by the mercy of Prabhupada one can become very qualified personality and help many others. Not with the aim of becoming qualified so people can worship you and all that. No. You have to become qualified so that you can serve others. This is the idea. To serve others. So, here, it's explained that the Kshatriyas, specifically, are having power, and their characteristic is to protect society from the disturbance of thieves and miscreants. This is one characteristic of a Kshatriya. Someone who is really eager to protect society from miscreants and thieves. However, in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says something different and very powerful. So you should try to read it. Fourth chapter, text 1 in the purport. First few lines. Prabhupada said that Bhagavad Gita is given to the kings. This is science that is given to the kings, the royal order. So Bhagavad Gita is studied by the kings, how to rule the citizens. It's there in the first verse of fourth chapter. Immediately the chapter opens with that. Prabhupada's first lines, Bhagavad Gita is a king for a book for the kings, for Kshatriyas. Immediately it starts. And then he says, the purpose of the Kshatriyas, listen to this carefully, is to protect people from lust. It's written there, clearly. So, what does this mean? That the Kshatriyas were not only supposed to protect people from external thieves and miscreants, but also from internal thieves and miscreants in the form of envy, lust, greed, anger, illusion, madness. So, Kshatriyas therefore had to be very, very qualified personalities because they were able to curb the lust of people. They could know how to manage people without them, the people, succumbing to lust and becoming enmeshed into samsara chakra. It's a very powerful king. In fact, there is that Vedic aphorism that if you cannot deliver your dependents from the material world, don't become a king, don't become a father, parent, mother, father, or a guru. If you cannot deliver your dependents, don't become a king. Don't become a leader if you cannot deliver. So therefore, you can see how important is the role of different varnas and different individuals in community, because they definitely can increase the disease of people if they do not know what is lust and what is love. They can increase the disease. And if they knew what is lust and what is love, they could decrease and in fact eradicate the disease within that kingdom by their own behavior and example. That's why Krishna wanted the Kurukshetra war, because Duryodhana was representation of lust himself. And Krishna knew that the citizens would be misled completely. And he wanted to set a standard for future generations. What is actually proper leader? Duryodhana was like a counterfeit leader, you know, because he was leading people towards the cycle of birth and death. Leader is someone who leads people somewhere. So if you follow someone, you should examine where is this people leading, this person leading you to. So Duryodhana, being atheist, being an atheist and being a very cruel person and very envious, more than a snake actually, because he didn't want to share even five villages for the Pandavas. He didn't want to give even little land for these five brothers to rule. He was like an envious snake. And what kind of example is that to the rest of the people? That what is important is whether you're in power, whether you're enjoying. It's not about sharing. It's not about harmony and camaraderie and relationship and kindness towards others. It's about your own egocentric tendencies and desires. So if people are influenced by such leaders, then they'll all follow whatever actions great man performs, the common man follows. So this is also given by Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. So Duryodhana was certainly a great man, and the common man would follow. So Krishna wanted the common man to understand this is not the standard of human civilization. And of course Krishna didn't want the war. He tried to make a treaty or make some agreement, as you know from Mahabharata, but Duryodhana was, no, I have to either everything or nothing. There must be a war. So then Arjuna didn't want to fight, but Krishna encouraged him, no, kill this rascal, that's all. In fact, Prabhupada says in one lecture of Bhagavad Gita that the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita, the whole this philosophy Krishna spoke, is to make Arjuna angry to kill Duryodhana. The whole this philosophy, 18 chapters, Krishna just spoke to Arjuna to motivate him to kill Duryodhana, because he was misleading everyone by his behavior. So you can see the great influence that especially leaders, people in position, they may have over their constituents. They can cause havoc, or they can actually uplift everyone by their behavior. So Bhagavad Gita is a leadership book. It's a science book and a love book. Leadership book because it teaches what is proper leadership. And Arjuna is the prototype of a proper leader. And what is the qualification of a proper leader? Displayed by Arjuna. The qualification was simply one, foundational. He surrendered to Krishna's will. One who surrenders to Krishna's will, he is a leader. That means he will lead you to Krishna. That's simple. And Bhagavad Gita is a science book because it gives you a full picture of the cosmology and the full position of the living entity, the clear position of the living entity in this world, and also the path, the bhakti science, how to be released from this samsara chakra. So it's a leadership book, it's a science book, and it's a love book. And why it's a love book? It's the love between two friends, and later they became the guru and the disciple. How a disciple should treat a guru, and how a guru should treat a disciple is there. So Bhagavad Gita is all these three in one. Leadership book, love book, and a science book. The most powerful literature that changes millions of people's lives if they read carefully what the message of Krishna is, as presented by Srila Prabhupada, because he didn't change anything. Prabhupada was a genuine leader because he surrendered to Krishna's will and we can follow him. That's why we follow Prabhupada. So, this is the characteristic of a Kshatriya. He protects people from lust. He tells them that you're not Purusha, you're Prakriti, you're the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You're the servant of the Parameshvara. There may be many small Ishvaras, Brahma, Maheshwar, they also mentioned, even Lord Vishnu, but Parameshwar is Shri Krishna, Ishvara Parama Krishna. So this is how the false ego becomes destroyed. When you engage yourself in the service to the Lord, then the false ego becomes destroyed. Because false ego means you are thinking you are the enjoyer and you should be served. And you serve others to gain sense gratification, to gain some kind of material pleasure. It's based on lust, it's based on false ego, it's based on illusion. It's based on confusion of what's our identity, actually. So the Raja Rishi is supposed to bring someone to the realization that actually your eternal identity is Jivera Swarupa Hoi Krishna Nityadas, your eternal servant of Krishna. And if the Raja Rishi lives according to this and teaches, then people will follow and understand. If the Raja Rishi just teaches this without following, then people will not follow. So integrity is one of the characteristics of Raja Rishis. Integrity, absolute integrity. So, we look at the life of Prithu Maharaj, Yudhishthir. There was tremendous integrity, and that's why they had such powerful influence over their citizens. When Yudhishthir was enthroned, there was complete transformation on the planet. So there is a interesting story speaking about the characteristics of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. In Mahabharata, you probably all know the story of Draupadi Swayamvara. So, how at that time, as you know, Vidura informed the Pandavas that you're going to be killed. That Duryodhana is trying to kill you. He has set up this house made of lac, which is very lightly, easily set on fire. And some wood that is very, and also being painted with this substance that can, shell lac, yeah. So you just put it, and put one match and it immediately lights up the whole place. So Vidura was informing the Pandavas that make sure that you will not become victimized. Duryodhana is scheming to kill you. He's going to send someone to actually murder you there. So then they dug a tunnel under the house. Over a few months actually they dug. Escape route. And I cannot remember the detail, but they understood that the time has come for this to happen, so then they left. There was a big feast, I think, in their house, and they, at night, they exited. So there were some pilgrims that actually remained in the house, sleeping, and the house was set on fire, and these pilgrims died. And strangely enough, there were five. So when there was the police came to do investigation, to report to the CNN.
There were six.
Five or six, yeah. Because of Kunti, yeah. So it looked like there were the five Pandavas and Kunti inside. So there was the report that there were six people there. There certainly the Pandavas are finished. So this news went all around the kingdom. Everyone was lamenting. Everyone thought that this is such a cruel fate. How can it be? But of course, Vidura knew that they have gone away. Krishna and Balaram, they knew, but of course, they wanted to see that this is true. So on and so forth. So they hid themselves in the forest for some time. They were staying in some cottage. And they were dressing themselves as brahmanas. Because they thought if we come out and present that we did not succumb to this fire, then Duryodhana will keep trying to kill us. So to protect him from committing further atrocities, they dressed as brahmanas. And one day they were walking nearby some city, and they saw some big group of brahmanas going to the city and seeing fellow men dressed in the same dress code. They respected one another, and the brahmanas actually told these Pandavas, you know, we are going to this big Svayamvara ceremony. King Draupada is marrying his daughter. Why don't you come with us? We're going to go and watch. It's going to be so nice. Come. All the kings are coming from the whole kingdoms, so many kingdoms. They're going to compete with one another for the hand of Draupadi. So come with us. So the Pandavas were, oh yeah, we should go. We should go with the brahmanas and be present. And it's explained in Mahabharata that King Draupada organized for a stadium, amphitheater to be built. And it was so high that it says that it was touching almost like the clouds. It's a big amphitheater, so many people were there. So when the Pandavas entered with the Brahmins, they went into a specific section of the stadium and they could see so many different kings were assembled there from different kingdoms, from all around the world actually they came to assemble there. And this is not strange because that time they didn't have aeroplanes. How can they come from all around the world? How did they know? But there were communications between continents. And in fact, I heard that you can reach by boat from Europe to South Africa in 2 weeks by boat. You know, so even ordinary boat. I think by ordinary boat it will be much little longer, but nowadays they can reach 2 weeks. So probably before it took them double the time, a month or something to reach. So people used to travel before over different continents. So don't think this is some mythology or something. The kings from many different countries were assembled there. And what today we call Europe, probably all the kings there, Afghanistan, Pakistan, this was all connected into one empire. So many different subservient king to the kings, to the emperor at that time, they would all come. So Duryodhana was at that time in charge. Dhritarashtra being blind. So the Pandavas observed so many different kings and they saw Duryodhana was sitting there. And in Mahabharata it's written he was sitting like the sun who was surrounded by the planets, his brothers. Some nice description of Duryodhana, despite his character. Sitting like the sun surrounded by the planets. So, then for a few days, I believe 2 weeks, there were just festivities. like musicians and dancers, and some drama will be performed, and all these guests will be entertained and fed by King Draupada, and charity will be distributed to the Brahmins. And it wasn't just one day show, you know, you just go there, something happens, and then everything done. No, 2 weeks of festivities, so much opulence Draupada had, and he was trying to please all the guests to make everyone happy. This real Kshatriyas, they want to show their generosity. Remember one of the characteristics, generosity. Very wealthy and very generous. So, when the final day came, Draupadi appeared, and it's explained in Mahabharata, she looked just like as if she was designed by Vishnu himself. She looked so beautiful. And she was dressed in golden silk sari, which was shining. And she carried a tray with a garland, a rose garland, that was supposed to be offered to whoever won the Swayamvara. She carried the tray and she appeared like that. And all the kings were like blinded by ecstasy when they saw her. And everyone, it's written in Mahabharata, everyone was saying, I shall win her. She's mine. You know, everyone was thinking like that. So, Draupada had prepared this huge bow. And they had to shoot a target, which was a moving, there was something which was moving, mechanically arranged. And then when it reached a specific point, you had to shoot the target, the arrow to go through that moving item. Yeah. And then you had to actually hit that target, the eye of the fish, yeah. So it was very difficult. And of course the bow was very, very heavy. So Draupada was thinking, there was a prediction that Arjuna will marry my daughter. But Arjuna is dead now. He burnt in the house of black, you know. Is this true? Can really this Rishi who predicted this, can this be a mistake? Can the Rishi make a mistake? I don't know. I don't think so. Rishis never make mistake, but it looks like he made a mistake because Arjuna is supposed to be dead. So he was thinking, and nobody, you know, when they arrive, everyone announces themselves. So Arjuna didn't come. So the king was a little morose, didn't know what the outcome. And he knew that this bow can only be lifted by someone like Arjuna. And the task can be achieved by someone like Arjuna only. He was kind of sure that the others wouldn't be able to do so. And Dhrishtadyumna, the son of Draupada, he spoke to the stadium. He announced that now we are beginning the Swayamvara. And he read all the names of all the Kshatriyas that were there. All the kings, he read all their names. And basically everyone cheered them up. And you know, it was a great festival. Ecstasy. Everyone was in total bliss. So many citizens from the city would come to observe. And then the actual ceremony began, and one by one the kings will come. And it's explained that this bow was so powerful that when someone strung and shot the arrow, the string will be so potent that it will almost thrust them back. And some of them even fell on the ground because of the potency. You know, when you string it and pull, and when you release it, some kind of a backlash energy comes and the person falls on the ground. So a lot of the kings were actually falling back on the ground, and everyone was laughing at them. So after quite some time, Duryodhana became very eager to show his prowess. And he went forward. And he was laughing at these kings. He was thinking, look at these fools and rascals. They cannot do anything. I'll show them now what's going on. So he picked up the bow. He strung the arrow. He shot. But he just missed by a few inches, it's explained. very, very small difference. And the whole stadium was, wow, you know, he just missed him. Duryodhana became so angry, so disturbed, you know. He went back and sat there in complete distress. Couldn't believe that he couldn't achieve this. So then Karna stepped on the scene, and he took the bow and he was approaching, and then Draupadi shouted, "I'm not going to expect the son of a charioteer as my husband." So because Karna was raised by a charioteer, then she kind of cut him out immediately. And then it's written that he laughed in an angry way, you know. He couldn't believe that he was rejected. I don't know how you laugh in an angry way, you know, but it's explained in Mahabharata. He was angry and he was laughing at the same time, like, almost like he couldn't believe that he was rejected and insulted in that way. So then he went away, and suddenly Arjuna felt, "I'm going to go." So he inquired from his brothers and they said, "Yeah, you should go." So Arjuna got up, and when he got up, all the brahmanas were bewildered. "What is this young man doing? You know, he's going to embarrass all of us. How can a brahmana, even all the kshatriyas, powerful kings couldn't do this. How can a brahmana achieve this goal? You know, no, stop him. You know, he's going to embarrass the whole brahman community." But some of them were saying, "No, look, you know, he looks pretty strong. You know, he's quite unusual for a brahmana. So he may have some Brahman Shakti and Brahman Tejas, and he may have also some physical strength. It looks like he may just do it, you know. So let's leave him, let him see, let's see what he'll do." You know, they were discussing, the Brahmanas among themselves, you know. And finally the elders, they said, "Okay, let him do, let's see what's going to happen." So then Arjuna went to the where the Drishtadyumna was, and he requested, can a Brahman actually try to achieve this goal? And then Drishtadyumna and Draupada agreed, "Yeah, okay, you can try." So then Arjuna grabbed the bow, the arrow, he strung it with some real ease, he focused for some time, and then he struck the arrow and he shot the fish straight into the eye, that wooden fish, moving target, straight into the eye. The whole stadium was in ecstasy. It's written actually that Narada Muni and many great sages were present also there, and they were throwing flowers from, demigods were also throwing flowers on top of Arjuna from the sky in jubilation. So everyone was so blissful and so happy except the Kshatriyas. They were so embarrassed, they were so angry. They were thinking, you know, this Draupada just brought us here to insult us. You know. So let us gang up together, all of us, and just attack Draupada, the king who Draupadi's father. And they were, the Pandavas at that time were just about to exit with Draupadi through the south gate, it's written. So they were just kind of exiting, and they saw all the kings ganging up and jumping on top of Draupada to fight him. So immediately, two people desisted from going forward. These two were Arjuna and Bhima. They went immediately back on the arena, and the others kind of followed as observers. They knew that they don't need to get involved. And also it's explained that, I forgot to mention one very interesting detail. When the Pandavas came, Krishna and Balaram were sitting there in this amphitheater. And they saw these five brothers. And Krishna said to Balaram, "Hey Balaram, do you think this is the Pandavas? Look at them." Balaram looked at them. Krishna looked at them very closely. And Krishna was smiling like, knowing that it's them, but he wanted to hear what Balaram will say. And Balaram actually looked at them very carefully and he said, "Yeah, look, Krishna, I think it's them." So both of them became very jubilant, very happy. But at the same time, they kept quiet. They never discussed and told anyone. They kept quiet, both of them. They saw. And it's written that when they started this fight, when the Kshatriyas went to fight, even Krishna and Balaram didn't get involved because they saw Arjuna and Bhima going there. So they just sat and watched. So what Bhima did, he immediately went to one tree and he took the whole tree out of the ground to fight them, to throw the tree on top of them, you know. And he fought with one very powerful king, forgot the name, King Shaulya or something like that. And Shaulya, yeah. And Arjuna faced the other kings to protect Draupada and Dhrishtadyumna. And then Karna appeared. Karna was so angry and he started shooting arrows at Arjuna. And Arjuna grabbed some bow and arrow from the Kshatriyas around there, that were around Draupada. And he counteracted all the arrows of Karna. And everyone was bewildered. You know, what is this? You know, how can these Brahmins fight like that? You know. So they defeated, Bhima completely defeated that king. They were wrestling. He basically crashed him to the ground. And the others were stopped by Arjuna, by Arjuna's arrows. They couldn't actually come any close. So ultimately, King Draupada was protected. From this, the Kshatriyas were very embarrassed. And Arjuna and Bhima and the five Pandavas exited the stadium and they incognito disappeared and went into the forest back to the cottage where Kunti Mata was there. So when Arjuna entered inside first and he said, "Mother, we found this amazing jewel today." And Kunti immediately said, "Then you should share it between five of you." She didn't know it was Draupadi, you know. So then when everyone came with Draupadi and Kunti was shocked, "What are we going to do now? How can I take my words back? I said that you have to share this jewel amongst all of you. How can you share one lady? You know, this is not according to Shastra. In Shastra, ladies must marry one husband. One husband can marry in that time many ladies, but especially the kings. But one lady, that is unheard of. How can a lady marry so many men at the same time?" So there was a discussion and Yudhishthir told her that there won't be any sin if they don't follow her words. Yudhishthir told his mother that, "Don't worry, we won't follow these words because we didn't know. There won't be any sin, no problem occurred. There won't be any breach of dharma, you know, if we just let Arjuna marry her, you know." But then Arjuna said, "No, according to dharma, I'm not the oldest. So Yudhishthir is my older brother and he's not married. How can I marry before him? So he has to marry Draupadi and then Bhima and then I'll marry," like that. So in this way, Arjuna actually encouraged that, you know, the first brother can marry first, Yudhishthir, and then of course, all of them, they loved Draupadi. She was so beautiful. And Draupadi also liked the Pandavas as personalities, and she was completely eager to follow whatever destiny will offer in the association of the Pandavas. Apparently, also there is a story in brackets why this happened, because she made five times a prayer to marry a qualified husband. So, in the previous life, Lord Shiva, yeah. And then the girl should be careful. Huh? You make five times, then you marry five husbands. So that's what happened to her. And but one person followed them. So when they went into this cottage, one person followed to see who these people were. That person was Dhrishtadyumna. So Kunti and Draupadi began to prepare prasadam for the Pandavas. And she told Draupadi that we cook that much quantity, 3/4 is for Bhima, 1/4 you share between the other 4. Bhima used to eat a lot. So Draupadi was following these instructions when she was serving. And Dhrishtadyumna actually went close to the window in the forest and he was hearing what they are speaking. And he heard they are speaking of weapons and fighting and all kind of things, and he realized these guys are not brahmanas, they are kshatriyas. So this is how you discover who is who, you know. You have to study their qualities. They may be dressed in some way, they may behave externally in some way, but you know, when the person is in challenging situation or when they're behind the curtain, in other words, they are not scrutinized by others, they show the true color, who they are. So in this case, the kshatriya's nature came forward from these brothers. They just spoke of weapons and fighting and this and that. And they never spoke shastra. Did you hear that verse? You know, did you hear in the Upanishads it said like this and like that? And you know, so then Dhrishtadyumna understood. He became very happy. He went to report to Draupada that these are actually not brahmans, they are kshatriyas. Very interesting story. So I thought to share this with you because it's so much in line with how do you find the qualities of real kshatriya, the characteristics of real kshatriya. He protects citizens from thieves and miscreants, or debauchees, Prabhupada is saying here, debauchees. But also he protects the citizens from lust, succumbing to the tendency not to serve Krishna. That is called lust. You may be a very good man who is not serving Krishna, then you are lusty, that's all. But you may appear to be lusty, such as the Pandavas, they may be appear and marry in one wife, all of them. But because they are serving Krishna, that is immediately the transcendental platform. And it is considered an act of service to the Lord, actually. So it was also such a dynamic, we could say, a lila of the Lord that is unusual. The Lord's lilas are very unusual and cannot be understood by the mundane consciousness. One has to be trained by a bona fide spiritual master. Tad vidi pranipatena pranipashnena sevaya. So few final points, and I'll take one or two questions, is that Prabhupada says here, in this age of Kali, we don't have kshatriyas, and we see how people are not protected by thieves and miscreants. Today I read this funny joke in the morning before I came. Someone posted on Facebook like a picture, and it was saying one person is in front of the judge in the court. And the judge is asking him, "My dear sir, why did you rob the bank?" And he says, "Honorable judge, actually they robbed me first." So, this is today, our leadership is robbing people. They are not helping people. And Prabhupada says that because people are not protected, then they have to go to the insurance company. Prabhupada is writing it here. And the insurance company, they also cheat many times. You'll go there and you'll appeal. They say, you know, look, we can't give you this because of such and such reason. And terms and conditions applied. So I'm sorry, you know, but don't forget to pay your insurance for the next. So it's just a farce of civilization. We are destroying nature, we are destroying ourselves. Yesterday I spoke at Urban Yoga to about 30, 40 young men and women from Western background, most of them. And you can actually see how modern kids and youth, the teenagers, and they are completely confused. They don't know who they are, what they're doing here. They're just drifting around like river clouds. some German boys and girls were there, one whole group, and they said, we're going to Tasmania for the rave party or some rainbow party, you know. So this is our youth. It's now is the time really to do outreach. Prabhupada, when he went, all the youth was very disgruntled, and now it's the same. Basically, don't think that this was just when Prabhupada was on this. It's the same. The youth is completely dissatisfied, disgruntled, disturbed. Now it's exactly the same time. So we have to reach out. The problems of modern human society due to lack of qualified brahmanas and kshatriyas and the over-influence of the vaishyas and shudras by so-called general franchise. So, when vaishyas and shudras become leaders, or unqualified kshatriyas even, like Duryodhana, become leaders, they do not lead people towards ending the cycle of birth and death, but they in fact encouraging people to enter into the cycle of birth and death. For them, what is important is some dharma may be there, but the goal is artha and kama. No question of mukti. What to speak of purushartha, prema, Krishna prema. So Vaishya and Shudra, he's thinking, you know, I just need to make some cash, you know. And the one wants to feel powerful and happy by making a lot of cash. And the other one is thinking, I just want to enjoy my senses, pay my rent, get some food, and I'll be satisfied. Get some wine, enjoy the opposite sex, I'll be very happy with that. This is how Shudra thinks. But Kshatriya is someone who is concerned, how can I protect society? Brahman is someone, what is the absolute aim and objective of life? Let me examine the Shastra. He's not so much into, let me get cash, let me get this, you know. It's different. So, now hardly any Brahmans are there. But of course, in Miskon, Prabhupada is initiating us into Brahmans, but that doesn't mean if you take the initiation, you immediately are Brahman. If you think like this, you are a rascal, that's all. You have to become a Brahman by qualification. You have to practice. Kadamba Kana Swami one time said that in ISKCON we become put into a position and then we one day we become qualified for that position. It's not that from the beginning of being put into the position you qualified. So don't think I'm Brahman, here is my Brahman threat, you know. He's a rascal. Brahman is humble, he's not proud. In fact, he'll hide his Brahman threat so that people cannot see. He's not interested into status and all these things. He's interested how to serve, how to find the absolute truth, how, and if he knows the absolute truth, how to serve and how to guide the Kshatriyas and everyone else to come that way, to engage them appropriately, kindly, so that people can make progress. So there is no problem if we have the qualifications of Vaishya or even laborer. Just continue doing your duty and chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. With great humility, study Shastra as much as you can. And if you are sincere, you will achieve Krishna consciousness. You will go back to Godhead. The Varna cannot stop one from going back to Godhead. It is the intention behind. Bhaktirtha Maharaj always used to tell me and other devotees, what is the intention behind what you're doing? Are you trying to serve God, please God, or are you trying to become God? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for the nice class. Today is also a very special day. We have been there.
So many.
In
essence, Vishnu Priya was Ladini Shakti, the internal energy of the Lord. She was the daughter of a powerful Brahmana. And after Lakshmi Priya passed away from this world due to being bitten by the snake of separation from her lord and husband, she Nimai Pandit, who was at that time gone to on pilgrimage to Gaya. Then after his return, Nimai Pandit was requested by his mother Sachi Mata to remarry, and she chose Vishnu Priya for him. So, being an obedient, submissive son, he married Vishnu Priya. Vishnu Priya was extremely pure lady. She was absolutely devoted and dedicated to her mother-in-law and Sachi Mata and to her husband. And it's explained that although Lord Chaitanya, Nimai Pandit, loved her a lot and she loved him a lot, when he decided to leave, he decided to leave, despite all that, to serve humanity, to take sannyas. And when he did that, she would basically perform austerities. She would chant the Hare Krishna mantra on her beads, and as many rounds she would do, she would put a grain of rice. One round, one grain of rice. Two rounds, two grains of rice. That was her vow in mourning for the loss of her husband, and also focusing her own consciousness on serving Krishna. So that's what she ate every day, little palmful of rice. Even if you chant 300 rice, rounds, how much? 300 grains of rice, how much? She was extremely austere, very humble, very devoted. And Lord Chaitanya made a deity of himself and left it, and then she worshipped that deity, actually. There is a deity in Navadvip, Vishnu Priya deity also. So we can learn from her example of chastity and dedication, both, you know, in this case to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and to Mother Sachi. Then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, you said? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wanted to take the renounced order of life. He was married, but he was a little disturbed. And he asked his guru, can I take sannyas? So his guru told him, you go for one night. He was there with his guru for some time. So his guru sent him back, you go back to your home and spend one night with your wife on the bed and tell me what you did. And the whole night Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur read Srimad Bhagavatam to his wife. And the guru said, you qualified. Who else was there? Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami was the son of great zamindar, business person, multimillionaire. And he was living in a great palace, surrounded by servants. He was extremely beautiful and intelligent young man. However, he became attracted to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he tried to escape from his house on a few occasions. And he got caught. Somehow other his father's guards found him and brought him back. So he, the father established paid guards to guide him on a daily basis at night, in front of his door, in front of the window. He was guarded not to run away, because the father was thinking, if he runs away, who's going to run the business after that? So then after some time, they decided, he made another attempt and they caught him again and brought him back. So they decided, you know, we should marry him for this, find some very beautiful girl, and that will keep him here. So they found this celestial beauty girl, Miss Universe, they brought to him. Yes. And when they married him, he still tried to run away. And then the father was thinking, I'm going to put a chain. And the mother was saying, even if you put chain, he will run away. You can see this most beautiful lady, cannot keep him here. What to speak of chains. So in that way, they could not keep him. And one day again, somehow or other, he ran away. And he went to meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he approached Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he missed to approach Nityananda Prabhu. And Lord Nityananda punished him to organize the festival Panihati. That's how Panihati exists today. Being from a wealthy background, he had a lot of wealth, and he fed all the Vaishnavas in this village, Panihati. In fact, Vaishnavas from other villages also came. They heard there will be massive feast. So they all gathered, and there were so many of them, there was no place where to sit. Some of them were sitting inside the Ganges on the banks of the water there. So many of them were there. Thank you, Prabhu. And then Lord Chaitanya appeared also. He was not there in person, but basically Lord Nityananda was saying that Mahaprabhu appeared and he received this feast. And then a few more things about Raghunath Das Goswami. Important things is that he stayed in Puri. He observed the Leela of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri. And he was very intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya. He became very intimate. Initially, he would offer big feasts to Mahaprabhu and his disciples. Then he felt, I am like a rascal. I'm taking the money of my father. I'm depending on my father. So he renounced this. And he decided, I'll just depend on the Lord. So he stood in front of the temple of Puri, Jagannath Puri, and he begged from people for his maintenance. And Lord Chaitanya was very happy that he has become even more renounced than before. But then one day he didn't see him begging there. And he asked the devotees where he is. And they said, no, he doesn't beg. He decided not to do that because he felt he's like a prostitute standing there for some money. And he and Mahaprabhu said, but what he eats now? How he maintains his life? No, he goes where the cows, the barn of the cows, and when the rejected rice from the temple is thrown there, whatever the cows do not eat, he'll collect it and wash it, and he'll eat that as Mahaprasad. Mahaprabhu was amazed. And immediately called, call me here immediately. And when Raghunath came, Lord Chaitanya told him, give me some of your prasadam. So Raghunath Das Goswami said, no, how can I give you this rejected, from the cows even, I cannot. Lord Chaitanya grabbed one rice, he ate it, and he said, this is the best prasadam I've ever tasted in my whole life. So Raghunath Das Goswami became an observer of the final leelas of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri. And when Mahaprabhu departed, Raghunath Das moved to Vrindavan, and he became the main source for the kavachas of recording Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. He narrated most of the leelas that happened in Puri. And Raghunath Das Goswami wrote many, many books that teach Raganuga Bhakti. He is a Prayojanacharya in our movement, spontaneous devotion, and particularly in the mood of the gopis and the manjaris in Vrindavan. So he's one of the most illustrious examples in our movement who has achieved perfection. And also, I heard that he hardly slept in Vrindavan. He slept like one and a half hours a day. He took little palm full of buttermilk like this he took daily. That was his food. So he was completely subsisting on transcendental energy. Shri Raghunath Das Goswami ki?
Yeah.
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur ki?
Yeah.
Vishnu Priya ki?
Yeah.
The Pandavas ki?
Yeah.
The powerful, authentic Kshatriyas ki?
Yeah.
His Divine Grace, His Confounder, Charya Bhai Charan Aravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yeah.
Shri Guru Parampara ki?
Yeah.
Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki?
Yeah.
Harinam Sankirtan Yaga ki?
Yeah.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki?
Yeah.
Mahaprasad ki?
Yeah.
Gaur Premanande.
Yeah.